Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome. Today's guest is Michael Marcon. He is the founder and CTO of Symphony Risk Solutions, is a serial entrepreneur, and an author who is, in my view, one of the leading practitioners of thinking and applying the smartest communications techniques as a CEO to impact their business. Michael, welcome to the pod.
Alex, great to see you. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Michael, I'm flattered that you are... You saw the potential in Relate2. You know, I'm like honored to have you as an advisor and investor in our firm. But I think the purpose of this is to get a little bit of a download of how a successful serial CEO founder who understands ins and outs of specifically private equity owned businesses, deals with private equity. How do you think about communications? Because, you know, for a lot of people, you say communications, and it kind of you start thinking, oh, well, this works for communications professionals. And my take is communications is too important to be left to communications professionals. And you had this vision, you know, for a while, way before we started with our work and how to apply it and do it differently and interestingly. And so this is a platform to get a download so that other CEOs and people who want to work with investors and senior leaders, you know, get to think how do you deliver results by communicating differently.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. It's how we basically connected. When I first met you and got introduced to you based on the success you had in very early stages of Relate2, and I think it's a great business model, by the way. And I think what we connected on was a statement I made to you early on in our first discussion about how we approach interacting with clients, or more importantly, prospective clients. And the comment I used was, words matter. Mm. And I talk about that all the time internally to our team. Words matter. And the reason that I say that is because I believe very strongly that clients and prospects make decisions subconsciously. They get touched subconsciously. Yes, you can see the price. Yes, you can see the terms and conditions, but anybody can present that to you as a buyer of insurance, right? So I look at this as a seller of insurance to people who are buying insurance. Well, if you think about that, every person who needs to buy insurance is already buying it, right? And so if you take that one step further, I look at it and say, my new business, for me to get a new client, somebody else has to lose a client, right? Because it's a zero-sum game at this point. Every now and then a new coverage comes along and you can sell a new coverage. But it's not like selling an iPhone where no one ever had it before and now you have 8 billion potential customers on day one, right? We don't have that in insurance. So something has to differentiate relative to that decision maker. And if you assume that everybody has access to the same information and everybody has access to the same insurance companies, so therefore everybody has access pretty much to the same price, then how are you going to differentiate yourself? And that's where I believe communication and presentation. So communication writ large, there's the words, and then there's how those words are communicated and how those words are presented. It's the combination of all of those things that you touch the person in here, not up here. You touch them in here. It's something about it. For example,
So, like when you say in here, you basically mean like the crocodile brain, like the do I trust this? Does this resonate to me? Does this require
exactly.
me out of force me out of status quo of whatever I'm doing?
Exactly.
Okay,
Well,
got it.
it's also left brain, right brain, right? So I can read the words on the page, right? And I can read what they're saying to me, and I can calculate that, and I can comprehend it. And then there's the other my part of my brain that how do those words move me, right? Everybody, almost everybody, and certainly you can use technology, et cetera, to touch this part of the brain. It's just here are the words, here are the facts, here are the details, right? How do I move them so that when I'm looking at all of my choices, even though they all look relatively the same, I'm moved over here. This one's pulling me in a direction. Why is that? I'll give you a great example. The name of our firm. The name of our firm is Symphony Risk. Now, I'm not picking on our competitors. You know, they're all very, very talented people. They all do a great job. But if you were completely ignorant on anything that has to do with insurance, you knew nothing about it except you had to buy it from somebody, right? And all you were given in front of you were names of firms. And firm one is Hub, and firm two is Acrisure, and firm three is Gallagher, and firm four is Marsh, and firm five is WTW. And go right down the list. And then you have Symphony Risk. And you say to the person, pick just based on the name, who is going to manage your risk better? Who do you want to entrust your risk to? And that's all you have to go on. If 100 people out of 100 don't pick Symphony Risk, I will eat my pocket square, right? It's because it moves them. Symphony means something, right? It's beautiful, it's moving, it's touching, it goes into your soul. The fact that that name was available boggles my mind,
Surprises.
right?
Well, I
And
just wanted to
so,
plug for the title of your book because it will connect. It's Conductor's
right.
Guide
So
to Business and Life Success.
the
So you
title of the
must have
book
thought about
is
this.
the Conductor's Guide. Yes. Because again, think about what we're building as a firm. This isn't in communication, but what we're building as a firm is based on industry specialties, right? And we take the same concept again. Words matter. We take the same concept of what you do in a symphony. You want the best musician for every instrument. You want them to all play together. People get that intuitively. So when we say to somebody, our firm is different, well, why? Well, we have all of these specialties, but they all come together under one roof and they all play together. Now think about what a conductor does. If you've ever heard an orchestra warming up before they get started, it sounds like crap, right? It's just cacophony. It sounds terrible. Until what does the conductor do? Tap, tap, tap. Raises his hands. Now we're ready to go. And the next thing that comes out of them is beautiful. Right? And it's moving and it's touching and it's emotional and it touches people on this side. They can read the notes. They know that it's Strauss or Beethoven or Mozart and they can see the notes, but this is what you want to touch. And business is no different. And That's what I realized very early on, that there was a right way and a wrong way to communicate. Doesn't mean I get it right every time. It's trial and error sometimes. But that's the differentiator, is how do you make them feel comfortable? For example, in communication, the use of buzzwords and industry terminology. Clients do not understand what we are selling them. They don't understand it. They don't spend time in it. And so what does that mean? It means that they don't really understand what you're presenting to them, but they're not, most of them are afraid to admit that. So they're not going to tell you, "I don't understand." They're just going to nod their
I
head.
didn't become successful by showing that I don't get it, or I don't know. Right. That's just not the okay, understood.
So when in our firm, we eliminated any acronyms. You can't use an acronym in our firm because
So
the client doesn't know
FSA,
what.
HSA, you kind of need to at least give it the full description, and then it's really funny that you say that. In our experience in working with benefits, in particular, because that's both B2B and B2C, and so even the understanding is even worse sometimes for average employee to understand what their benefit solution is. One of the things that clients love is the explainers, which is sounds like this is philosophically what you've been believing in all along, right? Like, don't give me the term. I don't even know what it is. But like, bring it in. If I get to that section and I'm interested in it, I want to know what it means for me in the human language.
And don't forget that even on B2B, right? There's how many, I mean, I've been doing this in November, it'll be 40 years that I've been in business, and I've seen this hundreds and hundreds of times where we step into a company and the person in the role that we're interacting with, a risk manager, a head of HR, a CFO, they might have just got promoted into that job. And so you would expect, for example, using your example, you would expect that a head of HR knows what FSA is, right? And knows what ACA is. And you just throw these, around as if they're normal because we do it all day, every day. But what about the person that was in a different role and just got promoted into that job? They have no clue. And not only that, communication is the use of the words, how the words are presented, and the cadence, right? Because the other challenge we have as experts, right, is we go really fast, really fast. And they can't keep up. So it's always easier to have the person on the other end say, I get it. I understand that. I used to do this, or I understand what you're talking about. You can move on, than to assume that they know everything when they don't. I made a joke to a colleague of mine months ago, and they asked me what my superpower was as an insurance broker. And I said, well, I'm not smarter about coverage. I'm not smarter about industry specialization. I've got really, really smart people that are industry experts and really, really smart people that are coverage experts. I said, what I'm really good at is explaining to the other person what it means in English. And I joked with my colleague and I said, if I had a dollar for every time I use the phrase to a client, it's kind of like, if I had a dollar for every time I did that, I'd have as much money as Alex Shevelenko. That's how much I'd have. I use it that often. And then they go, oh, I get it. Because one of the things that I'll do is, depending on the person that I'm interacting with, if I know the industry that they're in, that they specialize in, let's say it's aerospace, and I'm talking about a particular industry, I'll say it's kind of like when you're taxiing on the runway, You want to be able to, or it's kind of like when you're coming in for a landing, or it's kind of like when you're, prepping before takeoff and you're doing your checklist. I put it into some terminology and some
That
frame of
resonates.
reference that they see every day.
So that's
So
brilliant. Is that just natural, by the way, Michael, or is this something that you build over time? So, for example, checklist works well in navigation, maybe in a healthcare context where there is a very strong checklist culture to reduce risk of around procedures and processes. And you just basically kind of know that industry enough and know that that's a reference that's going to work. Do you come up with
Well,
them on the fly? Like, I'm curious, how do you make
you
that?
know, it started, that's how I learn, right? So I've always learned in analogies. When I had to wrap my head around, I grew up in finance, and that's, my area of specialty. And so when I was trying to learn these things in business school, et cetera, I always tried to come up with, what is it like? What is it like that I could visualize? And then when I could get my head around it visually, I would be able to then approximate and find the words to explain what I was thinking. So I always took that with me in my career path. Now that I'm a leader, right? I'm not the expert in healthcare. I'm not the expert in aerospace. I'm not the expert in real estate. I'm not the expert in construction. I'm not the expert in entertainment and education and hospitality and private equity. Well, I am kind of an expert in private equity, but other than those, so what I've done is I just keep reinforcing the power of language and communication. Words matter, words matter, words matter. Presentation matters, consistency matters, subconscious, subconscious, subconscious. I want that in the heads of all of our professionals. They then apply that subconscious objective that I gave them, and they apply it to their area of expertise. So, to your point, our healthcare team, Symphony Health, they will, in a checklist-oriented environment, they'll still have me in their head telling them words matter, be concise, all of these things, but they'll apply it to the fundamentals of how they communicate with their clients versus our team in aerospace that does it completely differently. But the consistency of pick your words carefully, they matter, subconscious decision making, don't make them try to figure out what something means, tell them what it means, etc. All of that, I think, is really important. And then there's the how it's all presented, right? It was one of the things that blew me away, right, about your product and how you do it, is the beauty of the presentation, the consistency of the presentation. It makes it easy to digest all of these complexities, right? So it's not a jumble to the recipient. And we've all been there. How many times have we done presentations to the client, and how many times have we put decks together that are 80 pages long, right? And they're like, where's the conclusion? Where's the conclusion? Tell me
Or
what
where's
I
the
need to
part that I
know.
care about right now? It's sort of interesting you bring it up. So, like, if I had to play back one for people that are worried about some commoditization pressure, and I think maybe insurance has some of that, like as you said, more, but I would say everybody should be worried about that in the age of AI to some degree, right? Like, that is, if it was kind of something that you uncovered that was important for brokers, it's more important, than ever. And then the second thing is you have a complex subject matter, right? So there's lots of content, lots of buzzwords, terminology. Not everybody, as you said, is an expert. And you know, when you're business insurance provider, you cover a very broad spectrum of business needs as well. So I think that adds further to that complexity. So there's commoditization and complexity. And then the solution to that is kind of how do you translate it in a way that resonates with the audience? And certainly we are very proud to get like the focus on the presentation and the visual layer, but we think words matter too, right? AI could create an audio track, it could add, you know, explanations for words that are maybe necessary to use that are, you know, definitions, but you don't want to bore people with definitions of everything until they
Correct.
get to that part, right? So, but the part that I am curious also to get your take on is like, okay, we've presented it. And then there's in the meeting right now, we're having a conversation, you're nodding, there's that feedback loop. Oftentimes, we just send over something, and the people are not even in the room when they're consuming that. And we don't have that feedback loop. We still need to understand if they understood, right? Because the communication is successful when actually there's some action that happens as a result or some level of understanding.
Right.
And typically it's like a black hole. Like you just send over some stuff and then rarely we get real time understanding and feedback unless you're sitting across each
Right.
other. So we're able to capture that. Like, what's your take on that part of capturing that feedback from the client person, or when you don't have the luxury of being in person?
Well, you have to create a comfort level that they're going to give it to you, right? And so that's again a skill set on how you tee up the process to begin with. So I'll give you an example. It's actually a personal example. I won't mention the person's name, but I have a friend who's a businessman, and he's building a sole proprietorship business, and he's dealing with some issues financially, and I'm kind of a quasi investor in this business. And he sent me this long email about I'm dealing with this issue and this issue and this issue, and it's very complicated. He was very frustrated. It was in over his head a little bit. And I was traveling and had a very, very difficult schedule for a couple of weeks. So I wasn't able to address it right away, but I read through this email. And I wrote him a note back, and I said, "Listen, I'm traveling for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be back on this date, and we'll sit down and go through these five or six issues that you've raised. But one thing I want you to take away from this note is I understand what the issue is. I've got a solution for you, and everything's going to be okay. So, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks." So a couple of weeks go by. I finally meet up with the person, and I said, "Oh, by the way, do you want to schedule some time to talk about this issue?" And he said to me, "I read your reply to me, and as soon as I heard you say everything's going to be okay, my blood pressure came down dramatically. I took a deep breath and I started addressing these issues on my own before you came back. And now I want to share with you all the things I've already done subsequent to that email and before I've seen you to fix it, because I gave him a comfort level. It's going to be okay. And he trusts me." And so when you know you're putting something out that you're not going to be able to get that immediate feedback, it's really important on how you tee up the presentation that I'm about to hand to Alex. Right? If I just say, "Attached is a presentation for your review. Please let me know if you have any questions. Kind regards, Michael." That's a completely different dynamic than, "Alex, I'm so proud to send you this information. We've been grinding on this for a month. I can't wait for you to see it. Here are three things that you're going to see in there. There's lots of details. I'm happy to walk through them with you, but here's the headline. You're going to save money. Your coverage is going to get better. You know, your hair's going to get fuller. You're going to lose 15 pounds, and you're going to meet a sexy woman. You know, and I'm giving all of that to you in this proposal. See you in a week," right? That's a lot better
Can
because
I train my AI agent on doing that intro? I
Well,
liked it.
but the point is, you're now you're now giving them a headline. So now they're reading your proposal, your findings, your report, whatever, through the prism of this level of expectation. It doesn't mean you lie to them. I'm not suggesting that at all, because they'll see through that and they'll never trust you. If it's
Right.
bad news, give them bad news, right? But say, oh, by the way, here's the bad news. I've included two solutions in here, and one of them has this outcome, one of them has that outcome. There's a lot of details in there. Once you've digested it, I'm happy to answer questions. I'm happy to follow up with you. And you give them a comfort level that you're not just dumping it in their lap and they have no recourse. So it's all about how you tee it up. And it's not that complicated. What would you want to read if it were you? If I always ask myself, if I'm sitting on the other side of this desk and I'm the recipient, what do I want to see? What do I want to hear? What questions will I have? And how will I go about answering those in advance and anticipating them as best I can? You're never going to bat a thousand. No one expects you to bat a thousand. Because here's the other important thing. Again, it's the subconscious stuff. I keep coming back to this. I believe this at my core. It's the subconscious stuff. They can tell when you're trying. They can tell when you're making the effort. And when they know you're making the effort and they know you've got their back, because they can sense it in everything you're doing, even though it's just words on a page or it's electrons on a screen, but it comes across. That's when you build this connection of trust. That carries you through bad news, right? And
So it's
then every
basically
now and
hearing
then, if you give
sense.
them good news, it reinforces it.
So if I'm hearing correctly, you really need to be intentional.
Absolutely.
And the there's a little bit of a transactional mindset oftentimes in business. And what you're saying is, look, we can there are times to do transactions, but I think the intention is the first. The killer, the most important thing. And then when you build enough trust and and that connection, you can build the transactions
Well,
and versus
you've heard this phrase before. I don't know who said it. Maybe you do, but the famous line where somebody said, "Dear George, I apologize for writing you a long letter. I didn't have time to write you a short one." Right? So anybody can just spew, right? It's really hard. It's Bezos, no PowerPoints. Put it all on, one slide or however it works, right? That's hard to do. That's hard to do.
And then
And one of the things
the
we put in the book, we put that in the book about give people short declarative sentences, give them bullet points, don't give them paragraphs, don't give them faux legalese. You don't need to start sentences with notwithstanding the foregoing, right? You don't need to do that. Just give them the statement. They're smart people. They'll figure it out. Make it easy for them to digest. And if you have to caveat, 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 you probably didn't do your job, right? And they're going to see through that. And good news comes in one sentence,
That's
right?
beautiful. So it's interesting. A lot of our focus and relate to community is around regulated industries, right? And regulated industries like insurance, there is a bias, where there is a lot of legal folks, right? Like it is insurance is a contract, right? Like ultimately what you're selling is a contract and promise. It is very much inclined, therefore, to go into this caveats and be complete and be legally sound. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I think that comes later, right? First, you need to be coherent. And then the other, I want to resonate something by you. So I write sometimes notes to people, and I'm writing the email and I'm grinning. And my wife is like, what are you doing? Like, are you watching a movie or what? working even. And I found that it was an interesting observation because when I'm writing someone that I like or I want to connect with and maybe trying to write something funny, I'm smiling
Right.
when I'm writing that. And I wasn't even aware of that necessarily. And
Right.
I think that was I was reflecting when you were talking about kind of how you write your email, is that that's effectively like your mental state needs to be, you know, I'm here, I'm almost smiling, I'm not, maybe this person is not
Yes.
getting it in real time, but we're having fun, or we're kind of, or we're being real, you know, like there's some authentic emotion that's
Yep.
happening versus a transaction, which is the opposite of emotion.
Well, and that again, that comes down to how you choose your words and how you do it. It's where it's coming from. And I'm a contrarian on a lot of this stuff. So I send handwritten notes to people. Why? Because they don't get them from anyone else. So it stands out when you get a handwritten note. Every employee in Symphony Risk Solutions gets a handwritten birthday card from me every year, right? Which is getting harder and harder to do. When I come back from a business trip and I open this drawer right here, and Melissa, my assistant, will have all the cards I have to do for that month. And it's like, okay, here we go. Right. But I do it. Why? Because it means something. It touches them. And I understand regulatory requirements. They're there for a reason. It's a shame that society has gotten to the point where we have to overregulate all of this. There's ways to do it. And again, we don't want to manage business to the lowest common denominator. If someone wants to sue you, and if someone wants to be offended, they're going to sue you, or they're going to be offended no matter what you do, right? So there's a fine line between saying your mileage may vary versus when you watch the commercial of a guy jumping out of an airplane, with no parachute, drinking a Mountain Dew, and you have to put at the bottom, do not attempt this.
To don't do this right.
Well, okay, right? Telling a client that their premium calculations may be affected by the final calculation of their census, right? Or if employees move into different states, we gave you an estimated premium, not an actual premium, and to say, this is just our estimate. The actual priority is the insurance company that sends you the bill. That's one thing. To say, we can't give you any estimates at all whatsoever because we don't know what the actual number is going to be, and therefore we're not going to take the risk to tell you what that number will be because you're going to hold us to it if we're wrong. At some point you have to assume that people are reasonable, and that there's no intent to defraud, right? And that's just reality. And I don't ever want to be in a society where your disclosure pages are longer than your proposal.
So on that note, if we shift to another kind of area that you're expert in, and that's private equity, right? And we live in a society where private equity is an important allocator. An owner of resources, and you've sold to specifically to private equity firms. You have private equity investors. You've exited to private equity folks. You know that industry inside and out. And one of the things that intrigued me is that you said, "Hey, this you could leverage something like Relate to in private equity owned businesses for private equity folks." Tell me a little bit about how to. You know, those of us that are living in that environment have private equity folks as some kind of stakeholders or customers. How do we think about communications in that universe?
It's a different dynamic. First of all, yes, I have been doing that for a very long time. So the comment I always make is I've been working with private equity firms since before they were called private equity firms, right? So I go way back. And they are the smartest people on the planet. And some of them will actually tell you that. But they are. They're the smartest, they're the hardest working. I always advise our teams, do not BS a private equity professional. They will see right through it in a heartbeat. And private equity professionals are the only people I've ever met in almost 40 years in business who will say, well, they'll be on slide 40 and say, well, why doesn't this number match on slide 12? Shouldn't it be the same number? And it's like, how did you find that? And I go through this stuff with a fine-tooth comb, and I didn't find it. They're that good and they're that smart. And they're trained really well. So one of the things that I've learned, and everybody who's now going to go copy this, have at it. And I wish you all the success in the world. Private equity professionals want answers. Their job is to look at outcomes. If you think about what a private equity professional does every day, they build these enormous financial models. And these enormous financial models are loaded to the gills with assumptions, interest rates, demand, supply, raw materials, hiring, compensation, market performance, what competitors are going to do, what everything, right? It's just enormous amount of assumptions. And if as an advisor to them, you can take one or two of the assumptions in their model and turn it to a fact, it's two or three or four less things they have to worry about. It's like, we got that taken care of. We can focus on all these other variables that we don't know so much about. So, in the closest, and if you can't turn it to a fact, then turn it to a reasonable certainty. Like, I can't promise you, but I tell a joke to them. I wouldn't bet my firstborn, but I'd bet my secondborn that this is going to be the outcome, right? And but there's never any certainty. I have another joke that I tell our clients when they ask me, "Well, why do I need this coverage? I don't understand why I need to buy this coverage. I don't understand why I'm paying the price for this coverage." And I always say to them, "Okay, if you don't tell anybody, I'm going to let you in on my foolproof method that will guarantee certainty on whether you need to buy this insurance policy or not. But you have to promise not to tell anybody because it's a proprietary algorithm and no one else has it. And the data points are really, really specific. But if you can give me the data points, which I think you have, right? Then I can give you an answer with 100% certainty, and I have never missed." And they go, "Okay." I said, "Okay, so here's the data I need to determine for my algorithm whether or not you need to buy this insurance policy. Tell me if you're going to have a claim or not." And then I just sit there. And they go, "Well, I don't know if I'm going to have a claim." And then I say, "Well, then how am I supposed to tell you whether you need to buy the coverage or not? Right? If you don't know whether you're going to have a claim, then I can't tell you whether you need to buy the coverage." That's why you do it, because you don't know. It's a hedge against uncertainty. And everybody has a different threshold for how much risk they want to assume, right? Just like a lot of the work that you do is in employee benefits, and everybody that's buying employee benefits has to decide how much do we charge to the employee, how much do we keep for ourselves, what are we going to do, what benefits are we going to offer, how do we bring down the cost, all of this stuff. Everybody is searching. Well, guess what? Every business is different, and every business is going to come up with a different solution that works for them, based on their risk tolerance, based on their financial projections, based on their investor base, based on where they are in their life cycle. Not our job to make that decision for them. It's our job to advise them, right? So give them facts, give them analysis, give them data, give them potential scenarios, and then here's the secret to private equity that everyone in insurance is afraid to do. When they ask you your opinion, give them an answer. If I were you, again, other than it's, the number one thing, if I wish I had a dollar, was it's kind of like.
Yeah.
The second thing I wish I had a dollar for was every time I said to a client, if I were you, I would do this. Based on everything I know about you, if you're asking my opinion, I would buy this coverage. I wouldn't buy that. I'd buy this limit. I would have this employee contribution. I would have this 401k match. My opinion. You asked my opinion. I gave it to you. I give them trust. And in return, I get trust back. I trust them. They trust me that I'm going to give them my honest opinion. I trust them that if the facts change, my opinion will change and they're not going to hold that against me. Right? When they ask me my opinion and I give it to them, and then something negative happens 6 months down the road, and they say, "You told us it was X." And I can respond to them and say, "Yes, because you told me you weren't going to do any acquisitions. You just did three in the last quarter." Well, if I
That
would have
makes
known
perfect
that,
sense.
I would have given you a different answer. I trust they're not going to do that to me, and they trust I'm going to give them a straight answer that's not couched in caveats. Well, it depends. Well, it depends. Well, it depends. Well, great. Anybody can do that. Tell me what you think. Right? I'm
So it's
not,
all
I've
about.
never been afraid. I've never been afraid to give them a straight answer.
Beautiful. Michael, I know we're on the hour. I wasn't going to ask for the last piece of wisdom, but that was the mic drop. If I were you, thank you so much for your support and sharing your wisdom. This has been
Alex,
brilliant.
I love you and I love the business and I'm so pleased to be a small part of it and thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relayto.com, RELYTO.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relayto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.